You are Locked On Orioles, your daily podcast on the Baltimore Orioles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Orioles, your place for Orioles news and analysis from the clubhouse to the warehouse and beyond. As always, I'm your host, Justin McGuire. I'm a veteran baseball journalist. I spent 8 years as a senior editor at Sporting News. I'm a former Cy Young voter, a former Rookie of the Year voter. I host another podcast. It's called Baseball by the Book. Please check that one out as well. More importantly, though, I'm a lifelong Orioles fan. Guys, I just turned 50 this week. And the reason I bring that up is because in my 5 decades on this planet, exactly one baseball team has finished with a worse record than the Orioles are in pace for in 2018. That's the 2003 Detroit Tigers. And you have to go back to the 1962 Mets to find a team other than those Tigers who finished with a worse record than the Orioles are on pace for. What I'm saying is that this team is really bad, possibly historically bad. So that's what we're going to talk about today, as painful as it might be. Baseball historian and author Mark Armour joins us, and he's going to try to give us some perspective on just how bad the Orioles are in terms of baseball history. We'll get to that in just a second. Hey folks, just a reminder, for all the original content of the Locked On Podcast Network, both the podcasts and the written content on every team, go to LockedOnSports.com. And of course, for all your content on the Baltimore Orioles, make sure to go to LockedOnOrioles.com. Hey everybody, welcome back to Locked On Orioles. We are joined now by Mark Armour. He is a baseball history expert and author of a lot of books, including In Pursuit of Pennants. He's an active member of Sabre, and just a guy who knows a lot about the history of the game. So I thought I'd have him on today to ask a question that is relevant to the 2018 Orioles, even if it is a rather painful question to ask. And the question, Mark, is this. Right now, as we record this, the Orioles are 24-61. That's a .282 winning percentage in 2018. They are on a pace to have, I think if I did my calculations correct, this would be the second worst record of any team this century behind the 2003 Tigers. So the thing I wanted to ask you, just looking at this grand sweep of baseball history, how bad is this team? Does this team rank among the worst teams ever, among the worst modern teams ever, if they continue at this pace?
Okay. Yes, that's obviously a difficult question, as you know. And I would say a few things which maybe are obvious, but I'll say them anyway. One is that this really, in the last 40 or 50 years, is a time that, for the most part, everyone has enough money to compete. There was a time when there was a disparity in the talent that was sort of extraordinary. I mean, like in the 1950s American League, I think there were always two or three teams that are worse than any teams that are around today. And then if you go back even further, I mean, there was the 1899 Cleveland Spiders that, finished 20 and 134. I mean, they basically were just picking up guys on the street. So with that out of the way, I think that, the modern game is different. And with the draft and, with basically every owner having, enough money to turn the lights on, I would suggest that this question should really be, for the last, say, 50 years, roughly. Obviously, there were expansion teams, and expansion teams tend to be pretty bad, especially the early expansion teams before free agency. The 1998 Diamondbacks were sort of a team that came in. They were an expansion team, but they signed Randy Johnson before the season started. So they were, in some ways, they were behind everybody else, but they weren't, ridiculous. But sort of among the teams that are actually trying, the Orioles definitely are an impressive bunch. I think I will say that I looked back at my notes. I'm in this this Predictatron where at the beginning of the season there's a bunch of people that take part in it. It's been going on for quite a while, and we pick, how many games we think every team's going to win, exactly. And you basically, your score essentially is how close you are. And I picked the Orioles to win 74 games, which they're not going to do. And I noticed that the consensus on ESPN was that they were going to win 77 games, which obviously they're not going to do either. So this is a team, as you know, that although I don't think anybody had any illusions that they were a World Series champion, I think everybody thought that they were trying. You know, they signed a few free agents in the off season, and maybe that was a little bit delusional, but I think there was some sense that, okay, they're not, you know, like if a few things go right, they could, you know, who knows, you know, some miracle could happen. So given all that, this team is pretty bad. What's interesting is that the Royals, as you know, are right there with them. And I think that the race for which team is going to end up with the worst record really could come down to who is the most effective in shedding their players. I mean, as bad as the Orioles are now, they're going to get worse. There's a good chance they're going to get worse once they get, if they actually make some of these trades they're rumored to make. You know, this team, I think the reason to go see this team is, you know, largely to see Manny Machado. I just, and then, you know, some of the pitchers and maybe Adam Jones and at least Machado, everybody thinks is going to get traded. You guys probably, you and your listeners probably know more about this current team than I do, but man, I just don't see getting up in the morning and turning on the TV without Machado there. So they're bad. I mean, there's no way around it. And what's worse about it is that you don't really see where the turnaround is going to come. They're not like the White Sox. I mean, the White Sox are bad, but you can sort of squint and see how this guy's going to get a little bit better next year and that guy's going to get a little bit better. And I think that's a little bit harder with the Orioles. And so the competition probably in modern times is the 2003 Tigers that you mentioned, who finished 43-119. And I remember that team well because I was hoping, I mean, it's no offense to the Tigers, but historically I was kind of hoping they would finish, you know, below the 62 Mets, but they actually won five of their last six games. Which was disappointing to the history nut in me. They were at one time they were 38-118, so they were 80 games under 500, which is kind of ridiculous. But then they pulled off the five out of six at the end. And the good news for the Orioles, of course, is that the Tigers were in the World Series 3 years later, and then the other terrible team that you're listeners may remember is the 1988 Orioles, definitely the worst Orioles team ever. Of course, that team started with 22 losses in a row.
21
loss. Sorry, I didn't mean to make it.
Yeah, come on, don't. 22 would be ridiculous.
Right, and it's funny because if you look at some of these teams from afar, it seems sort of, you look at the 88 Orioles team, which I was looking at the last few days because of this interview, and you look at the team and you think, wow, they had Cal Ripken, who's kind of in the middle of his prime, and he had a pretty good year, and Eddie Murray had a pretty good year, and they had Boddicker, who, you know, was pitching pretty well when they traded him, and it's like, you know, what was the problem? And the problem with that team, which is very similar to the problem with this current team, is I think oftentimes the difference between a 75-win team and a 55-win team is how bad your bad players are. And the Orioles just had a lot of – I mean, they had a few guys like Billy Ripken and Larry Sheets and a few other guys that, you know, their war were enough to sort of counteract Ripken. So you have Ripken – and the two Ripken brothers, if you add their stats together, they were basically a below-average pair. And it's pretty bad when you're giving up the Cal Ripken advantage with just one player. And they had a few of those. And this year's team is like that, too, as you know. I mean, you have Manny Machado and Chris Davis, and if you add them together, they're bad. And that's you know, that's an awful way to go about it. But the, and then, you know, as you know, the 88 Orioles had a, you know, sort of decent team the very next year too. It did it, that the AL East at that time seemed a lot more compressed than it is now. So it's sort of hard to see how the Orioles are going to contend.
Well, one of the things that's remarkable to me, you talk about the 88 Orioles, is their final winning percentage was .335. They lost 107 games. You know, 54-107 was their final record. Obviously really bad. This team right now has a worse winning percentage than that team had at the end of the year. So that's a team that spotted them a 21 game, you know, an 0-21, and still managed to have a better winning percentage than the Orioles have right now. That's just almost unfathomable. And that's why I think this team is just so surprising to me how bad they are. I was looking at other stats from the, you know, again, from the, just from this century. You mentioned the 2003 Tigers. The 2013 Astros were a team at the time. Everyone was talking about how they might be historically bad. They might challenge the you know, Mets for 120 losses and that kind of thing. They finished with a .313 winning percentage with 111 losses, and so they're better than the Orioles are right now. You know, the 96 Tigers, the 2004 Diamondbacks, some of these teams of recent vintage that were really bad were all better than the Orioles are right now. So the question is, can the Orioles right the ship? And by right the ship, I mean, can they play above that level? Can they be better than a .313 winning percentage for the rest of the year? The one thing that does give me a little bit of hope, I guess, is that their Pythagorean record actually has them a little bit better than their actual record. I think they're 30-55 according to Pythagorean. So they are underperforming just a little bit. And, you know, me, you know, sometimes these things kind of like even out over the course of a year. Maybe that'll happen with the Orioles, but I don't know.
Yeah, right. I was looking at that too. So they're, I think they're 5-14 in one-run games, which is, you know, really horrible. And you know, if they were, you know, 500, you know, most teams are around closer to 500 than that. You know, some of that is you know, that they're not that good, but some of that is probably luck. And you know, they do have. I mean, it's like, I don't know what's wrong with, you know, someone like Jonathan Scope, or you know, who was an All-Star last year, and I think, you know, deservedly so. And so I mean, they I don't think there's that much difference sometimes between a 50 win team and a 70 win team in terms of, like, you know, they call up a guy and it gets hot in August and suddenly they, you know, they pull off, you know, they win, they play 500 for 30 games. I mean, that can happen. I think it's hard to be this bad in terms of record for a whole season. You know, I mean, I don't know what Oriole fans are rooting for. I mean, do teams root for the first draft pick? I mean,
yeah, that's a good question. I've seen that.
In other sports, I mean, people are actively rooting for the first draft pick, but of course, you know, you're drafting, you know, famous people in football and basketball and baseball. It seems like more of a crapshoot. It seems to me that, you know, in my years of following underperforming or bad baseball teams, I just root for them to win every time I sit down. So I don't know if it's like that with you, but
I'm definitely still hoping for wins and realizing that they're few and far between these days. You know, number one pick is an interesting question because, you know, as things stand right now, it's going to be a battle between the Orioles and the Royals for that number one pick. You know, obviously things could change in the second half of the season, but right now those look like clearly the two worst teams in baseball. And, you know, I don't know, it's a tough call because I don't, from what I know, I'm not a draft expert, but from what I've seen, there's not, next year is not one of those years where there's a, you know, clear Steven Strasburg, Bryce Harper type who's, you know, the absolute number one pick. So I don't know if there's a whole lot of difference in the end of, at the end of the day between the number one pick and the number two pick, you know. So
right.
I'm not sitting here actively rooting for the number one pick. I'm sort of rooting for them to turn things around a bit and maybe finish with a, you know, a better record than the 88 Orioles, for example. You know, that's kind of where I am right now.
Right.
But I guess every fan's mileage will vary on that. You know, right now I can think the biggest thing as a fan you've got to hope for is that they don't screw up the trade deadline. they don't screw up the Machado deal and they end up actually getting some value, you know, or potential value back for him and for some of these other guys they trade. And otherwise the season is really just playing out the string and hoping they don't end up as, you know, the team, like you said, you're rooting for the 2003 Tigers to lose 120 or more games to match the Mets of 62. I think as a fan, I'm kind of hoping the Orioles don't do that. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I would absolutely be in that position. I still remember even as a kid thinking like, you know, if the Red Sox would be in, you know, if they were in fourth place, then I was rooting for them to, you know, pass the team in front of them. I mean, every sort of thing I could get out of the standings, I wanted them to figure out a way to get ahead of. You know, they're ahead of the White Sox now or whatever. I mean, it's little goals, but absolutely, yeah. I mean, you got to root for your team to win, I think.
And again, the problem with this team is that there's been almost no positive period in the whole season. They haven't had one of those, you know, a week where they won 5 of 6 games. You know, they haven't had anything like that. They've barely had 2 wins in a row at any point this year. I'm not even, honestly, off the top of my head, I'm not sure they've won 3 games in a row at any point. I don't think they have. I think 2 games is the most they've won in a row. And then they'll win 2 in a row and then lose like 9 of 10. It's just over and over again. There's not even like those small little windows of hope that you get with some bad teams. Because certainly as Orioles fans, we've witnessed a lot of bad teams. But even those really bad teams have had, you know, a month or something where they look pretty good.
Sure.
I go look back to the 2010 Orioles. It's kind of an interesting parallel. They were a team that was terrible throughout the year. And that's when they ended up firing, Dave Tremblay and hiring Buck Showalter. And then Buck took over in August. And they actually played rather well in August and September, above 500, and it kind of salvaged their overall record that year. I don't know if something similar could happen this year, particularly if they do decide to make a change with the managerial seat. You know, I guess it's possible that you kind of have to start rooting for like things like that, though, of just, you know, miraculous, you know, a month where they actually play well and kind of get themselves off this pace of 117 losses or whatever they're at right now.
Well, the guy that I haven't really been able to figure out as somebody that has watched the team on occasion is Alex Cobb. Like when they signed Cobb, I thought, wow, that was a kind of a savvy, you know, pickup. You know, and I think they got him in March, and I just kind of, I mean, it wasn't like I thought he was going to win the Cy Young, but my God, I mean, he was a pretty good pitcher last year, and when I sit down and watch a game and he's pitching, I sort of assume he's going to pitch well, even though he hasn't at all. Is he a guy they're going to be looking to trade, or maybe nobody wants him now?
Well, I certainly think they will make him available. He's on a 4-year contract, I believe, if I recall correctly. So that's going to be a tough sell, I think. I mean, even if there's somebody who's out there who's willing to take a flyer on him and say, hey, you know, maybe he could be our 5th starter, I don't think anybody wants to commit to him for 3 years after this. So
that's
going to be a tough one. But I certainly think they would make him available if somebody's interested.
Yeah, it just like, yeah, if you have these assets that become, well, I mean, I don't think he's worthless, but they become sort of, you know, below average players, and you're a little bit stuck. I mean, at what point do you cut Chris Davis? It's like on the one hand, you know, they've got all this stuff, you know, all this time invested in it, but on the other hand, I mean, it's kind of a sunk cost. I just don't know. I don't know. I guess if there's a 20% chance he's going to be the old Chris Davis again, but there probably isn't.
No, I don't think it's anything like 20. I mean, I think realistically he is not a major league player anymore. You know, he's just not he doesn't have the skills to be a major, not just a good major league player. He doesn't really have the skills to be a major league player. I mean, he still can hit a few homers, but that's about it. He's defensively not very good anymore. He's obviously strikes out a ton. He doesn't get on base. That was one of his skills in the past, is that he would take some walks. He doesn't really do that anymore, and we know his batting average is abysmal. So yeah, and you know, he's got 4 years left on his contract after this year.
God Almighty.
Thing.
Yeah, you know, it's like I don't necessarily think that getting rid of management when I say management, I don't mean the owner. I mean GM or whatever. I don't necessarily think that's a panacea, but the one way that I think it helps, and this helped in Boston when they hired Dombrowski. I mean, the fact that he was not wed to any of the old contracts. So when he came in, he didn't think of, you know, Pablo Sandoval as his mistake that he had to somehow justify. He basically said, is he good enough to be on the team? No. And he got rid of him with 2 years to go. And I think it's easier in some ways for a new GM, if assuming he has permission, to come in and say, do I want Chris Davis? You know, do I think Chris Davis is going to help my team? No. Then we'll release him. And I think it's harder for the guy that actually signed him to do that.
Yeah, and this goes into a lot of issues that we've talked about regularly on this podcast about the ownership and about who's really in charge and all that. And I don't want to, you know, relitigate all that because listeners have heard me talk about that a million times. But that's the basic problem here, is that nobody really knows who's in charge and ultimately making these decisions. All right, so let's just finish with this then. This is, we started out with the question of where does this team rank historically among bad teams? Do you think it's safe to say that this team has the potential, if you want to call it that, to be the worst team of, say, the last 50 years? Is that still in play?
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe they might not catch that Tiger team in terms of record, but in terms of, you know, the sort of the larger picture of what you mean by bad team, yes, I do think it's still in play. I think especially if, you know, if assuming they trade Machado, they're not going to trade him for anybody that's going to help this team. So if they trade Machado, they're going to get worse. If they trade Britton, they're going to get worse. If they trade, you know, Adam Jones or whoever, they're going to get worse. So, yeah, I mean, they're just, you know, they're just going to get worse. So, yes, I think that is in play. They're certainly in the conversation. And they could win, you know, less than 50 games. I mean, that's certainly possible, and that's pretty historic. That's happened just one time in your and my lifetime. So, if they somehow won 49 games, that would be, I'm not saying amazing in a good way, but amazing. That would be amazing.
It really would be. And what's even more amazing is potential they could lose, you know, they could win 49 games and not have the worst record in baseball. The Royals actually finishing with
Royals
48
right
or something.
And, right, the Royals are right there, and they're going to be obviously selling their only good players too. You know, Moustakas is probably going to get traded, and maybe Gordon. I mean, so they're, yeah, I mean, I don't, in a macabre sort of way, I mean, they're in a race for the bottom, essentially. And I think the Royals are another team that I think people squinted at and said, well, you know, they got, if this guy goes right and that guy goes right, I mean, they, you know, they could win 75 games or maybe 82 games. And yeah, I mean, and both teams were good pretty recently as well. It shows you how quickly it can all go wrong.
Yeah, these teams faced off for the American League Championship in 2014, which isn't that long ago in the grand scheme of things. But
no, it isn't. It isn't at all. And so, I mean, I feel for you. I think I've told you before that I've always had a respect and affinity for the Orioles team, going back to my childhood when they were the best team in baseball when I became a fan. And so, you know, I don't want the Orioles to be bad. So I hope that they are, though. So I hope they turn it around, though, in the next 2 years. Things happen.
Yeah, you and me both. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Mark. I appreciate it.
You have a good day, Justin.
And that's going to do it for another edition of Locked On Orioles. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.